climate tech is going to be the future, since this is where a lot of innovation is happening. It's affecting our lives on a real-time basis. So why is it that such startups are lacking the scale that the investors seek? What is it there? Why is there a gap here? And what, in your view, could be the solutions to overcome this? Ashish?
The world took 25 years to move from 1,000 gigawatt to 2,000. The first 1,000. The second one happened within 2 years. We are the only G20 country that has achieved its non-fossil fuel generation targets of 50% 5 years in advance. AI for energy is also an extremely important way for managing this new renewable energy scale up.
Hello and welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and philanthropists who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who were not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundary. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes and agonies and failures, and of course, the little joys of life. It is as much about the personal life stories as about their entrepreneurial, professional and philanthropic journeys. Unusual Suspect streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms. In the past few shows, we have been having deep, meaningful conversations with innovators and investors for the ENTICE 2.0 program, powered by the Global Energy Alliance for People and Planet. For the final episode of this particular sub-series, we are continuing the conversation around climate tech and we'll delve into what it takes to get those ideas off the ground. As the world shifts towards sustainable means in all walks of life, this episode will reflect on the global climate tech ecosystem. We are joined by Ashish Khanna, Director General, International Solar Alliance, who will talk to us about accelerating climate tech innovation and translating them into viable projects. Ashish has over 26 years of experience leading energy sector development in the private and public sectors in more than 15 developing countries in South Asia, the Middle East, and Africa. To make the most out of his enriching and storied career, spanning nearly 3 decades, this episode would draw upon his experiences to decode how ideas become deployable solutions through financing, policy support, and real-world testing. Welcome to the show, Ashish. Delighted to have you.
Thank you, Gaurav. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for hosting me and getting me.
Ashish, you know, let's start off with a very basic but fundamental question on this topic, on this subject, around this subject. You know, generally ranked among the top 5 global sectors by finding, climate tech has witnessed a slower growth compared to the other top industries. Clearly, while despite its importance, significance and impact, climate tech clearly is not drawing the same kind of traction that it should in terms of funding. Yet investors fear that they would not get the desired returns. It could be a question of ROI, among other things. But having said that, climate tech is going to be the future, since this is where a lot of innovation is happening. It's affecting our lives on a real-time basis. It's something that all of us are alive and alert to. And innovators in this area will guide us through the next big leap towards the renewable shift, because this something has to give here. And this is where a lot of innovation is taking place, and disruptions in the positive sense are also taking place. So why is it that such startups are lacking the scale that the investors seek? What is it there? Why is there a gap here? And what, in your view, could be the solutions to overcome this? Ashish?
Yeah, thanks, Gaurav. So let me first start with a little bit of a positive story. While there is a trend that the overall investments on the startups has seen a marginal dip, if you look at the clean tech, especially on the solar side, the story is actually quite buoyant. The world took 25 years to move from 1,000 gigawatt to 2,000. First 1,000. The second one happened within 2 years. And all leading research agencies, whether IEA or us, estimate that it's going to further double to 4,000 gigawatts over the next 4 years. And that's largely driven by economics rather than only climate change. Whether you look at solar PV, you look at storage, the cost reduction has been phenomenal. We are talking of more than 90% over the last decade, with almost 1/3 cost reduction, especially in storage, happening in just last 1 year. So it's largely to do with a lot of innovation. However, there are some constraints. One of the constraints has been that this growth is quite lopsided in few countries. And there are a lot of countries, especially in Africa, small island states, that have enormous potential, but are not seeing the same level of startups and growth. The other big element is there are a lot of new technologies that we believe the world will actually see a lot more. So the innovation will actually go multifold, and I'm happy to talk about 3 or 4 areas where I see the innovation will happen a lot more. One of them is storage, and I'm happy to talk what's really happening and why the climate tech space will actually see a lot more on both new technologies and their commercial feasibility across the two valleys of depth of going from prototype to scale. The second is things that we feel, and we can talk about the ecosystem challenges, where a lot more policy support and ecosystem between academia, government, and industry is needed on applications such as building integrated PV, which is probably a very important solution for India and the developing world, and in general, other new technologies like green hydrogen. So while the overall trends are still maybe a little down, but overall for the future, I think there is a lot that is happening and will continue to happen to drive innovation. Back to you.
You know, Ashish, it's interesting to talk about how solar is actually an outlier. If you take a slower growth, relative slower growth in this space is concerned, and solar is actually growing quite rapidly. Let's narrow it down to India. Let's talk about the circumstances and the conditions that exist in India, and probably at this point in time, the results can be described as a little bit suboptimal. We are a country. On an average, we have more than 300 days of sunshine every year. And that is a clear case that we should actually be leading in this space. Rajasthan clearly is an example. It's very rich in solar resources, and also, of course, the southern states, which are very rich in wind. So the potential is there. Despite this, however, you know, where do you see the lacuna when it comes to implementing these ideas on the ground? Why are we not seeing and witnessing these taking place at a rapid scale on the ground? And you know, try and reap the massive potential that exists here. Ashish.
So Gaurav, I'll start by first acknowledging that it's very important to see the glass half full rather than half empty. And we must start by acknowledging that actually India has done phenomenally well on certain aspects. And I'm going to again start talking about solar. We are the only G20 country that has achieved its non-fossil fuel generation targets of 50% 5 years in advance. We are now world's third largest solar producer in the world. And by current trends, it will become, according to us, second. So there is a lot that is happening. But let me tell the details about some aspects on which it takes time. And let me give 2 cases which reflect what is then the next generation of aspects that can drive this innovation in India. First, let's talk about agriculture. I think India had a very good policy framework called KUSUM in terms of solarization of agriculture. It has taken quite a while, but now, when you look at Maharashtra, I was there last week, and Maharashtra has already done 9 gigawatts of solarization of agriculture, and they want to do another 16 gigawatts just by one state. And with farmers now getting power in the day when they were getting it in the night, it's changing the socioeconomic structures of the society, in addition to already $500 million of subsidy being saved because a very expensive 7-8 rupee grid-based power is being replaced by a 3 rupees solar power. So that has taken a while, and I personally feel, sitting from ISA in India, that can be a game changer. Because our agriculture, unfortunately, has not grown at the pace of our industry and, more importantly, services. And solarization of agriculture, according to me, is a space where a lot more innovation is possible. The second part, where I feel there's a huge opportunity, and again, it's just emerging, as Rajasthan, you talked about, as more and more states go into a big renewable energy drive, it will be very important to have a distribution company that can manage that level of capacity increase. And why I say distribution? Because often, of course, we know, because of variable renewable energy power, the transmission interconnection is extremely important. The weather forecasting patterns are very important. But increasingly, as a lot more distributed renewable energy will happen, just to give you an idea, 40% of world's overall renewable energy was decentralized. That figure is only about 10-15% in India. So that's where probably the growth in India will happen. That the distribution company needs to have a real-time availability of data of what's really happening to all the distributed renewable energy, millions of rooftop players, maybe with batteries in future, solar pumps. And Rajasthan showed that a huge amount of saving is possible, even up to 20% of power purchase cost, if you could have managed that renewable energy more optimally. And that's a part where startups ecosystem is doing digitization and having AI-based algorithms for managing renewable energy optimization. Also identifying areas where future renewable energy should be prioritized, because it's a function of where your demand is and where you actually need more supply. And of course, as I mentioned, overall system optimization. So AI for energy is also an extremely important way for managing this new renewable energy scale-up. So I mentioned about these two broad areas where I feel if the policy, the private sector funding, including the venture capital and a lot of startups, can focus on in the time to come, probably India can become the hotbed for innovation, AI for energy and distribution, and a lot of solarization of agriculture.
Absolutely, Ashish. We're entering the high noon of the AI era, and we can see it all happening around us. So AI for energy clearly is where the buttons should be pressed. But having said that, you know, try and explain it to our listeners. What is it? Because many things need to move from the lab to the pilots and eventually to a scale level optimization. What is it that in this climate tech landscape needs at this point so that innovations can actually move from quickly, rapidly move from lab to pilots and then to rapid scale? Ashish?
Yeah. Let me explain it in two parts. The first part is that a lot of innovation is not vetted often to the big scale problems that we are facing. And I will give two examples for that. The first is the INTICE, where I was a jury member as well. When you want to help the distribution companies integrate a digital twin or an AI solution, right now, a lot of startups are doing it at a very small lab scale. And there is no platform that can bring those pilot scales, often done in labs or small, within the real world of a large distribution company serving 4 or 5 million consumers on an average in India. And I think that piece where there is a platform that can bring new solutions integrated into the large utilities was missing. And INTICE is doing it. We also have another program called Solar X, where we had 20 startups from Asia, 10 from India, 20 from Africa, and now 10 from Latin America, who are primarily doing exactly the same issue of becoming the disruptor, and then we're giving the platform that can then connect to both the financiers, whether they're the venture capital, the mentors, because a lot of these young people have a lot of passion and drive, but they lack the experience and the support of what it takes to actually go over the hump of a business plan and scale. So giving them those amount of that platform for support, and as I mentioned, connecting them, because a lot of these innovators can exchange ideas, learn from each other, and finally giving them the scale of the utilities. So this piece about the startup young people having the platform for larger scale, having the mentorship, having the platforms for accessing VC funding, I think those platforms are probably going to be very important, especially on the AI space, you said.
You know, Ashish, you have been on the jury to pick the winners for Entice 2.0. Do you notice some mindset shifts in a positive sense now among entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs, as compared to, say, a couple of years ago? Is there a definite attitude and mindset shift that you have noticed? And added to that as a supplementary, how do you see IS as a force to expand the regional solar integration coming into play here? And how do you see Entice winners and innovators plugging into the global solar value chains, Ashish?
So first of all, I will say that I feel it across the board, but especially on your question, Gaurav, the ambition and confidence is significantly higher in Indian startups. And that is what I witnessed being the jury member as well. The young people are no longer satisfied with their small scales. They want to integrate and go from a few thousands to millions. They also are thinking about the business plan. And of course, since they're talking about the financiers, the scale in terms of, you know, financial viability are becoming a lot more important. They're also looking at innovation in terms of new ideas rather than just automating some of the existing processes. And therefore in Entice, when we were looking for a price for innovations before the meter and after the meter, I think the solutions that are there have a huge scalability for a problem that is a very global South problem. And this is also something I want to say, which is quite important, that it is where it increasingly, as we define the problem of innovation in as specificity as possible, the ability of startups to solve that problem is going to be better. So even in our SolarX challenge, we are moving to a new challenge of battery storage and green hydrogen, where we are wanting to define the problem of India and Global South. Because more challenges and more innovation agendas that you have defining the policy problems that you want startups to solve, their ability to get mainstream into the platform and scale is going to be better. So that, I think, is the broad idea, and I am quite excited to see. In fact, just 2 weeks back, some of the Entice winners were asked to pitch their ideas to the Rajasthan Distribution Utility CMD. And that's exactly what is right now missing, that some of the startups must have an audience exactly with the CEO of the utility on the practical realities of what will it take for a scale-up of their idea. So I think having that platform through Entice has been very useful.
Absolutely. You know, let's change tack a bit. 3 years ago, COP27, ISA, and the Global Energy Alliance for People and Planet had joined hands to boost solar deployment. Give us a status check. You know, where is ISA currently in its mission to unlock about $1 trillion of investments in solar by 2030? Where are we now on that path? And what and how big of an impact do government regulatory policies or changes have when it comes to scaling climate tech startups on a global level? Specifically, do you think instruments like green bonds actually come into serious play here? And from an Indian point of view, have you got the regulatory architecture in place, and is it very conducive for this kind of a deployment and scaling up, Ashish?
So I will start by answering that globally, solar is in a sweet spot. As I started by saying, from 1,000 gigawatt to 2,000, going up to 4,000, largely driven by economics of a huge price reduction and solar and storage being the least cost generating source for two-thirds of the countries, and they're part of least cost generation of all countries, means that these industries will go up. Of course, a lot more innovation happening on newer technologies, whether it is building integrated PV, green hydrogen storage and others. But what I would like to focus a little bit more on is that we in ISA, looking at this huge shift towards green technologies, but also a global south-led agenda, we are in the process of creating platforms, because we believe our role as conveners are to create platforms that can be accessed by the startups, because often these startups, as I mentioned, have a lot of a passion and drive, but they want the right policy, the right academic interface, and the right interface with utility level CEOs. So we have a catalytic finance activity. You asked about the green bonds, especially in India's case. We believe long-term investments from pension funds and sovereign wealth funds, unfortunately, are still not happening in India, in spite of India having such a big market and target of 500 gigawatts. We are working on how can infrastructure investment trusts and other sources attract both international and domestic pension funds, because this sector needs long-tenure financing. We are also looking at innovation of green hydrogen and battery storage, because we believe India must be the leader on some of the new technologies. While it is trying to catch up with China on solar PV, when it comes to new technologies on building integrated PV, a lot of other technologies beyond lithium-ion batteries and storage, there is a huge potential for India to become a leader by having a very focused innovation, especially on a lot of research grants, innovation grants, bringing academia, startups, and government policy together.
Absolutely. Ashish, you know, you talked about long-term pension funds that needs to come into India, and clearly there's a lot of work going on it and trying to facilitate those kind of investments towards India. But do you think blended financing can bring about a big change here? Do you think there is enough opportunities to kind of exploit potential of blended financing here? And how can climate tech startups ensure investor and partner priorities along with achieving a sustainable infra development? Ashish.
Yeah, thanks, Gaurav. So on this, we are starting with Africa. We are actually starting a catalytic finance fund called an Africa Solar Facility. And what it is doing is it's providing innovative risk mitigation instruments, but also on certain mini grids and distributed renewable energy, say in case of Nigeria, a junior equity. Because a lot of these startups would need some kind of a financial support, either in terms of risk mitigation instruments, some scale up, and often in terms of junior equity. In case of India, I personally feel a lot of support on innovation and cutting edge research is where possibly the most policy support and financing is needed. Entice completely falls under it. Our SolarX and the new green hydrogen battery storage challenge falls into it, because a lot of initial support before you reach the commercial scale, you call it blended finance, you call it some form of a platform based innovation grants, that kind of a support is what is needed in the initial stages, because often for startups, they need some handholding in first couple of years before they approach the seed capital and the venture capital.
You know, Ashish, final question, and this is a very basic question. Why is it so very hard to convert early stage investors into funding for a Series B or Series C round, which require larger checks, and the check sizes do not get big? And that seems to be some kind of a pattern that has got set in here. Could be a little worrisome too, from a fundraising point of view. Do you think there are policy level changes that need to be done? What about large corporations, for instance? Many of them have very strong, monitorable net zero commitments. How can they boost clean tech firms? Ashish?
So it will require possibly a menu of ecosystem creation challenges, Gaurav. And one ecosystem creation challenge is that often some of these prototypes in the first valley of death need some bit of support before they can reach a commercial scale. I think India is still missing the risk capital. And that, I must confess, is less of a policy issue, but more of a private sector capital issue. I'm hopeful that some of the private sector philanthropies will prioritize a risk capital, because often a lot of risk capital is needed on some of these ideas that can become big. From the government and policy side, I think the key is a lot of research and innovation. While we have such huge ambitions on clean energy, often the research ecosystem, and there I continue to believe that India probably will need to partner with some countries that have already established a very good research ecosystem, and some bit of tie-ups with countries like Germany, Japan, others are extremely important, because there's a huge research ecosystem there, but the talent and the market is in India. So that those kind of tie-ups are also very critical for mapping that huge problems in the initial scale.
Absolutely, Ashish, very well said. Thank you so much for sharing your deep insights and perspective on a range of issues. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us.
Thank you for having me, Gaurav. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a good day.